From the World Newsroom in Boston, I'm Patrick Cox, and this is The World in Words, number two. Today, we offer you a Putin Fest, the utterances of Russia's outgoing president. By the way, do you know what Putin means in Russian? How about Medvedev? Also in this podcast, confessions of an Israeli government speechwriter.
As a free man, I take pride in the words, Ich bin ein Berliner.
Si se puede, is right. Yes, we can.
There are no knowns. There are things we know that we know.
Як шумаш? Thanks, Borat. The World is a co-production of the BBC World Service, Public Radio International, and WGBH in Boston. And you can find out more about the show, including how to subscribe to all our podcasts, by going to theworld.org. This week in Russia, we have a change of power of sorts. Vladimir Putin is stepping down as president. He's going to become prime minister. And the man who's taking over as president is Putin's close political ally, the guy whose name I probably mispronounced at the start of this podcast, Medvedev. We at The World needed guidance on this name, among other things. So we asked Svetlana Savranskaya. She's director of Russian programs at the National Security Archive at George Washington University. And here she is in a conversation with The World's Lisa Mullins. First off, that name.
Medvedev.
Medvedev.
Yes, something like that. Yes. Medvedev.
Tell us what the name means and what its origins are, so maybe that'll help us out a bit.
Yes, it's an interesting name, and Russians are already having a lot of fun with this name. The name, of course, comes from the word medved, which is the bear. And it's ironic how this name plays out in politics. This name has been the traditional symbol of Russia in the Soviet Union. If you look at the history of the cartoons in the 20th century, especially during the Cold War, you always have the Russian bear. And that symbol was also used by a United Russia as their party symbol.
So I don't get it. Did he adopt the name because of his political ambitions, or was he born with this name?
He was born with this name, which is interesting because some other Russian leaders, let's say Lenin and Stalin, adopted names to sound more profound. In fact, I think Russians really like symbolism of the names. Putin's name, for example, was related to the idea of put, which is road or way, kind of leading us the right way.
You said something else that was kind of interesting. Stalin and Lenin, those two names of those two major figures in Russian history, those actually weren't their real names.
They were not. In the conditions of the Russian Bolshevik movement before the revolution, it was very common to take pen names or revolutionary names. And both Lenin and Stalin, of course, Lenin was Ulyanov and Stalin was Djugashvili, Georgian name, took on revolutionary names. And Stalin's name was especially appropriate because it means made of steel, which, of course, sounded much better than a Georgian name to a regular Russian.
And his original name again was what?
Djugashvili.
Djugashvili. So we could have had
A Russian Soviet president with a Georgian name, Djugashvili, which is very difficult to pronounce.
Yes, and especially if you say Djugashvili grad instead of, say, Stalingrad.
Exactly.
All right.
But
so
can I say something else about Medvedev? I think
Medvedev
and the symbol of Medved is something that Russians really like. It projects this power and macho image, which is especially appropriate to the way the Russian public feels right now, especially in relation to the West. But the irony, I think, of this name is that Medvedev himself, first of all, he doesn't look like a bear. If anything, he looks like a teddy bear. He has a very sweet eyes and smile. And also he acts in a very, I would say, westernized, liberal, smooth way. And I'm sure we'll hear a lot of jokes connected with his name.
All right. Svetlana Savronska is the director of Russian programs at the National Security Archive at George Washington University. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay. Now, a song. This This was a hit back in 2004. It's an ode to Vladimir Putin, and the lyrics go something like this. Now I want a man like Putin, a man full of strength, a man like Putin who won't be a drunk, a man like Putin who won't hurt me, a man like Putin who won't run away. I don't know if that says more about Putin, or about the state of Russian manhood, or about the state of Russian popular culture. Anyway, Vladimir Putin has been a bit of a mystery to non-Russians ever since he became president. When he speaks, there appear to be two messages, one for the Russians in the audience and one for the rest of us. Here's an example. Last October, he was welcoming French President Nicolas Sarkozy to the Kremlin. And this is what he did. He recited a poem. It was intended, he said, to help Sarkozy better understand Russia. Here's the world's Jason Margolis.
President Putin read four lines from the famous 19th century poet Fyodor Tuchev. Tuchev is known for his poems about nature and love, about sunsets and thunderstorms. He also wrote sparingly about politics. Mr. Putin read one of Tuchev's best-known poems.
Mr. President, you said that you would like to understand Russia. We have a very famous poem about this. I do not know how the interpreter will translate it, but in Russian it sounds fairly convincing. Russia is a thing of which the intellect cannot conceive. Hers is of no common yardstick. You measure her uniquely. In Russia you believe.
Catch all that? Let's go back to literature class and take that line by line.
Russia is a thing of which the intellect cannot conceive.
Literal translation would be, Russia cannot be understood rationally. Or Russia is baffling to the mind.
That's Harvard professor Svetlana Boym. She teaches Slavic and comparative literature. All right, next line.
Hers is of no common yardstick.
Translation?
Russia is not subject to the common measure, means it cannot be understood in, if you wish, Western categories.
So let's review what we've learned so far. Russia cannot be understood by the Western rational mind. Don't even try. The poem's third line says that you measure Russia uniquely. And then there's the kicker.
In Russia you believe.
In other words, put reason aside for a moment and put your faith in Russia. Professor Boym says it's classic doublespeak.
It's a kind of a wink, you know. He says, yes, we also want to be friends with France, and, you know, it's great what you're saying, but you can't really understand Russia, which I think is also part of a comment on current Kremlin politics.
Got it? Or still a tad confused? Larissa Volohonsky can help. She's a Russian translator who just finished an updated English version of War and Peace. She says Mr. Putin chose an interesting poem to read today.
When anyone wants to say that Russia is a mysterious country and that there is a mysterious Russian soul, when people don't know what to say, they quote this.
But the bottom line, what was Mr. Sarkozy thinking? Did he understand the cryptic meaning behind Mr. Putin's chosen words today?
I don't think anyone really understands what these four lines mean. I haven't read the French translation. God knows, you know, things, get, as we know, all know, get lost in translation.
That's Larissa Volohonsky ending Jason Margolis's report. Now, Putin doesn't only draw on the highfalutin lingo of 19th century Russian poetry. No, no. Нет, нет. He's also just as comfortable, maybe even more so, with words that speak to regular Russians. Here's something he said earlier this year. A man should teach his own wife to make cabbage soup. Huh? I think we need another interpreter. Cue the world's Lisa Mullins again, this time with Michelle Birdie of the Moscow Times, who fills us in first on the cabbage soup thing.
That is a reference to an old television show from the 1970s, and it essentially means sort of mind your own business. Пусть жену свою учит ши варить там. It means literally a man should teach his own wife to make cabbage soup over there.
Is that intended to be a laugh line?
I think it got a good laugh, yeah.
It did get a good laugh. And now I understand that you're an American, but you have to kind of be culturally aware, not just understand the translation, but understand the derivation.
Yeah, where everything comes from. And a lot of it is very difficult because Putin, when he is giving a press conference, he lets slip this seemingly endless supply of folk expressions, sometimes kind of street talk from, one assumes, his days in the KGB. And you have to figure out where on earth this stuff comes from. Now it's kind of a national pastime after one of these press conferences to pull them all out and figure out what they mean and where they come from.
Speaking of pulling them all out, there's one particular phrase that he used that is kind of curious. Can you mention it for us? Better you than me?
The one about the all?
Yeah.
He was asked if he wasn't tired, and he said, of course, Shila Stienku in the Bakavuyu Zalech, which translates literally as, of course I could, as some people used to say, stick my all in the wall and lie down on my side.
And that means what?
What that means is, an awl was used to make shoes, and because it can get very easily lost, what a worker or a shoemaker would do is just stick it in a piece of wood so he wouldn't lose it. So what it means is, essentially, at the end of a day, sticking your tool in the wall and then lying down on your side to go to sleep.
Now, you translated this as hang up your hammer and hit the hay, that sort of thing.
This one, the best guess of linguists seems to be that it's kind of shoemaker slang.
And you actually consulted a shoemaker on this one.
I did.
You're good.
I went down to my shoe repair shop, and he had never heard the expression, but he was very flattered that questions of state and translation were being brought into his shoe repair shop.
Well, President Putin has come out with some others as well that I imagine you have a fairly difficult time translating because they are a little colorful.
I think the most vivid one was when somebody asked him about his wealth. He said his wealth was all his experiences and all the richness of his term as president. But as to the rumors of material wealth, he said, "Все выковыривали из носа и размазали по своим бумажкам."
So give us the translation.
Mm-hmm. They just picked it out of their nose and smeared it on pieces of paper.
Unmistakable. And very
gives you a good sense of what he thought of those press reports.
Yeah. I guess we'll know, in terms of Putin's hand-picked successor, Medvedev, if Putin is really calling the shots and not Medvedev, if he starts using these Putinisms too.
Yeah, we'll see. So far, Medvedev has not shown himself to revert to very folksy talk or crude language. You know, I've been kind of joking that these last 8 years have been an excellent education for all of us in the Russian language. We'll have to see what Dmitry Medvedev gives us.
You're going to miss Vladimir Putin.
Oh, I will. Every press conference was a language lesson.
Michelle Birdy is a columnist for the Moscow Times. She has a weekly column called The Wordsworth. Nice to speak with you, Michelle.
Thank you very much.
Now, if you want to hear what a Putinism sounds like in the original language, here is the man himself at that news conference that Michelle was talking about. And I'll just remind you ahead of time what Michelle's translation was of this. They just picked it out of their nose and smeared it onto pieces of paper. So here's the Russian.
Все выговорили из носа и размазывали по своим бумажкам.
Nice. Now, for a change of course, the state of Israel turns 60 this week. Compared to countries like Montenegro or East Timor, 60 years is ancient. But put it up against Spain or the Netherlands, and Israel is barely out of diapers. If this next segment is anything to go by, the government of Israel remains amusingly immature and unprofessional in its hiring practices, at least when it comes to hiring speechwriters for its mission at the United Nations. The hire in question is Gregory Levy. He's a Canadian who took a job with Israel's UN mission pretty much on a whim. He was unqualified. He was completely unqualified. He was certainly unqualified to respond to the many, many attacks on Israel, especially attacks written in foreign languages, written in many cases in French. Here's Gregory Levy in conversation with the world's Lisa Mullins.
Tell us about the incident with the UN diplomat who wrote criticism of Israel and wrote it in French.
So this could have been disastrous for me personally. You know, I said on my CV that I spoke French to some degree. I put like intermediate knowledge of French. Growing up in Canada, you have to study French. But, you know, it never really took. I'm not exactly a French speaker by any stretch. But one day I get a call from a senior diplomat. He says, I come into his office, says, "You speak French, right?" And I wanted to say, well, assuming you're not going to ask me anything further along this line of thought or ask me to do anything at all, yes. But unfortunately, that's not what he had in mind. And he said, well, we got this statement from a UN official speaking French, and it's an anti-Israel statement. We need you to translate it right away, and we need to write a response. And I sort of numb, walked back to my office and closed the door and wanted to cry.
Yeah, you looked for the window, but there was no window.
There was no window. It was there was no doorknob even in that office. But I was I called like a girl I'd been on a couple of dates with who knew some French, but I couldn't reach her. I called friends. No, I couldn't reach anyone. So the answer seemed to be to use like my very, very, very bad French and a online translation tool, free, and that's what the translation I used for this was.
Although you had in the back of your mind a translation, a biblical translation that was mistranslated at one point, so you knew things might go wrong.
Well, I think the original quote is, you know, something like, the body is willing, but the spirit is weak, and translation software has turned that into, the meat is good, but the vodka is rotten.
So here you have this in the back of your mind, that this free software is going to have you totally mistranslate this accusation against Israel, which you are then to respond to.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, I did my best. And that translation was picked up by all the wire services and newspapers around the world. And, you know, one of these diplomats run into my office and says, "See, you're making a difference already." And I said, "Great, I don't want to make a difference."
So the statement roughly said what, and how were you, what was your process of translating it?
Well, so using this online tool and my horrible French, I did my best to try to translate it. One of the key, sort of the most acidic phrases in the translation, or in my translation, was the official calling Israel the great poison in the region. But after I'd already handed it in, I started thinking, well, hold on, like the word in French, poisson is fish, and I thought, is he just calling Israel the big fish? Which, you know, it's not true, but it's not so offensive. And I start worrying that I've made this really, acidic remark on his behalf, really.
That you're going to cause an international incident,
yeah,
because of your lack of French.
Right. I mean, because I never thought that, you know, working for the Israelis in New York City, I'd have to use French. But yeah, that day I did. And luckily, the translation was not so problematic, although it was horribly mangled, and it was kind of ridiculous to see it, you know, quoted by all these papers from all over the world. And actually, the spokesperson for the Secretary General, Kofi Annan at the time, made a statement, and he said, "We never used the word poison." And I almost had a heart attack at that. We never used the word poison.
Because you're thinking maybe it was poisson.
Maybe it was fish. Yeah. Maybe you're talking about fish. No. But luckily, he was just saying his office had never used it, and this other official had. Thankfully, I got the substance of the remarks correct, even if I mangled the syntax.
That's Gregory Levy. His memoir of his short career as a speechwriter is called Shut Up, I'm Talking, and Other Diplomacy Lessons I Learned in the Israeli Government. Next time on The World in Words, the Gregory Levy saga continues, and it gets even weirder. He moves from New York to Israel, where he starts writing speeches for Israeli Prime Minister Ariel Sharon. And he tries to get Sharon to channel Jerry Seinfeld. That's next week. And that's all for this week. Thanks very much for listening. Check out the rest of the world's output at theworld.org. And you can contact me at language@pri.org. Till next time, bye-bye.